The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning. It is Monday, the 24th of March. 45 degrees. Going to be a nice day. Gosh, could see mid-70s. Maybe even set a record or two tomorrow. And then it's back to winter for a little while. So it's a little bit of that time of year, that transition season, where it's a little bit of herky-jerky. If I had been more ambitious yesterday, I would have mowed the lawn again and done some weeding and various other things. But I was not ambitious, so I worked on old tube radios because I just need a little bit of therapy. For some people, yard work is therapy. For me, yard work is just pure drudgery. But troubleshooting and fixing stuff, to me, that's really what makes me stand up and cheer, I suppose. Speaking of standing up and cheer, good Lincoln Day dinner over the weekend, just like it was a great Patriots conference in Josephine County over the weekend and the prior weekend there. And the local community Republican Party is starting to raise money, trying to get things back in order. Jackson County Republicans in a bit of a rebuilding mode. And that's been happening. The old regime got a little sideways with a few things, but I would just say things are getting better onward and upward. And I tell you, Congressman Cliff Bant's one of the two featured speakers, and we had Dr. Kim, who was the keynote speaker, you know, of the night. Pretty amazing local entrepreneur, and she had moved here from. Well, I guess she really escaped from Korea. She had been born in Korea and was considered a curse on her family back in the 1940s because she was the eldest daughter, right? And so and then she ended up becoming a Taekwondo master, has all sorts of entrepreneurial businesses going on, everything from vineyards to computer issues. And it was quite an interesting story. What was also really interesting, though, is how cheerful Congressman Bent was. And I had even mentioned to him, because I ended up emceeing the Lincoln Day dinner. And you know, what a difference a year makes, because, you know, last year and the year before that, prior under the Biden administration, Congressman Bent, you could just tell it was sort of defensive. It's like, okay, hang dog, what are we going to do? Here we are in the opposition, and now we're in the majority. Of course, it's not much of a majority, which brings a different set of challenges with it. But still, good to see Congressman Cliff Bant. Of course, he was on the show on Friday and had a pretty good talk. And he ended up talking about some of this. And I saw a story that reminded me of what Congressman Bant had talked about on Friday's show and at the Lincoln Day dinner on Saturday. And it was a New York Times story that was detailing chaos and tumult and drama in the Veterans Administration. And Cliff said, well, Bill, how many people have been cut from the Veterans Administration? How many people have been laid off? Now, remember, Biden administration, if I recall correctly, he told me on Friday, was 50, 60,000 more had been hired just during the Biden administration. And now there's 500,000 people working for the VA. And everyone's talking about the chaos and the gutting going on at the VA. And I said, I don't know. I'm going to say, you know, maybe a couple thousand, because I figured there's a lot of making of drama or a lot of, shall we say, distorting of what's really going on in some of these federal agencies. He says, yeah, I think it was like 2,400 that he was talking about. And he talked about it in the speech on Friday. And so we always have to remember this as we see the hissy fitting just continuing. And a lot of this is astroturfed. Even Chuck Schumer pretty much admitted over the weekend that, we're sending people here, we're sending people there. Yes, in other words, they're sending rent-a-mobs just about everywhere to make trouble. Okay, all right. So so you fire, what, 2,400 people out of 500,000? It's barely a rounding number. Barely a rounding number. You could probably go into most any organization that had 500,000 employees and then fire 2,500 of them, and you know, you chances are would not be gutting the organization. But yeah, this is the immunity system, really, of the blob. The blob, the foreign policy and government workers sort of circulatory system that is Washington, D.C. Now, it's not to say that what's happening with Doge and all the rest of it is always smart or always well organized. Some of it has not been too smart, and they've had to reverse, but you're going to make some mistakes along the way. Looking here a little closer to home, I mean, this is interesting. This is in Willamette Week. And I've wondered about this for a long, long time. Oregon lawmakers make a full court press on literacy. But some advocates say House Bill 3040 does not include features that have helped other states turn their reading scores around. Now, you know, when it comes right down to it, public school accomplishment in the state of Oregon is real challenging right now. Depending on who you talk to, we're 49th. Another source says that we're number 45. Let's just say, okay, let's be kind. We'll say that we're 45th best schools in the country. And I think one of the places which is worse than us is Puerto Rico. So we're one notch higher than Puerto Rico. Boy, that's something to write home about, right? That is something. Not really, okay? But the big challenge, and I was talking about this last week, And with you, and I forget which guest I was talking, maybe it was Noah Robinson, maybe someone else, but for me, what made the difference was being able to read. My mother knew how to read. She was a good reader. My father knew how to read, but he didn't really enjoy reading, so I wouldn't have really gotten that from him or received that from him. I got that from my mother. And so reading is the key to unlocking the education experience. It's just fact of matter. You know, if you can't learn to read, you're not going to get to do anything else. You know, we're not talking about the Socratic method, or we're not sitting around there debating in classrooms. You know, you need to be able to read and absorb some of this information. So what the state legislature comes up with is House Bill 3040. And it will amend Oregon's Early Literacy Success Initiative to address key gaps. Okay, well, obviously, it must not have been successful in doing anything. Otherwise, they wouldn't be talking about amending it. But the initiative, which was a 2023 effort to increase literacy for students from birth to third grade, provides money for districts to use on things including tutoring, curriculum, and teacher training. Teacher training? Aren't we hiring teachers that came out of the teaching colleges? Don't they teach how to teach reading? Do they not do that in teachers' colleges? I don't know. Maybe they don't. So this all was in response to Oregon's dismally low reading scores. This is from Willamette Week, by the way. I'm taking this from. Only 42%, less than half of students, posted as proficient in English and language arts. And as a response to the nationwide shift to embrace the science of reading. The science of reading? Really? The science of reading? You know, maybe within the so-called solutions of this, we can maybe see the germ of the problem, but I'll get back to that here in just a minute. At a Wednesday hearing on this bill, this is House Bill 3040 once again, members of the governor's office and the Oregon Government Department of Education emphasized that the new bill will strengthen and refine the initiative. It will increase the emphasis on approaches that have worked in other states, instructing the Oregon Department of Education to support school districts in selecting evidence-based curriculum. Evidence-based curriculum, I think, is one of those code words for more of that Common Core stuff, isn't it? And also expanding professional development opportunities to train teachers on how to teach that curriculum. Having served on the Governor's Council on Literacy and dealing with our teacher prep institutions, this is the piece that was missing. This, according to Representative Boomer Wright, a Republican from Coos Bay, saying at a Wednesday hearing on the bill, "This is important that we get into the classroom and give our teachers the practice and the training they need to make sure they know how to deal with the science of reading." How did we ever deal with the science of reading back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, even the 1900s, back in the bad old days? The science of reading, doesn't that strike you as we're going to make this so utterly complex? Something which is relatively simple, really? I wonder, and I don't know, I don't know. I'm kind of just taking this from a Willamette Week story. So the bill will also instruct ODE to study early literacy and strategies to help students learn how to read. It has garnered a number of supporters, including the Oregon Education Association. Now, I see that's the teachers' union. The teachers' union doesn't normally support anything that doesn't actually get more money into teachers' pockets, usually. The Coalition of Oregon School Administrators and Stand for Children, an education advocacy nonprofit. It's actually a hard left nonprofit. Let's be real. But a number of literacy advocates opposed the bill in written testimony, writing that as long as school districts get to dictate how their money is spent, Oregon won't see the turnaround in literacy that other states have. Now, the way it's been explained to me by other teachers, I don't have any kids in this school, so I can't tell you what my experience has been. And for the longest time, Oregon was kind of a big deal on teaching whole language, in which they wouldn't teach you to sound out the words. And one of the big weaknesses of whole language, which has been one of the biggest educational experiments ever done on our children, in my opinion, is that the kids don't understand the building blocks of the language. That a CH sound can be a CH in certain things and SH in others. You know, those sort of things. And how you deal with NGs and INGs. You know, the various other ways of building it. And my mother just taught me, well, I guess while today would be called the science of reading, well, she didn't have the science of reading. She just knew how to read. And so she would teach you how, well, she taught me and taught the other kids to. I don't know if Diana cared. Diana wasn't much of a reader. But she taught us all. But I remember it was like sounding out the words, getting the building blocks of the words. Not looking at full words and just knowing, oh, that's dog. Is it the dog? You know, well, yeah. And that's the way it worked for me. Now, maybe the science of reading doesn't work for everyone, but it sure did for me. I have a sneaking suspicion that when Oregon's looking for a one-size-fits-all or a top-down approach, maybe that's because some districts are wanting to go back to more of a phonics kind of method. I mean, there's a company that made millions back in the 1980s. I remember all the ads, Hooked on Phonics, and the kids learn to read, get the reading tutor, and all this sort of stuff, Hooked on Phonics. And parents were so desperate that they were buying this. Well, if they're buying it from Hooked on Phonics, obviously they're not getting it from the government school system. So what I really would appreciate, if there's anybody who is actually teaching in schools, if they could tell me if there is still kind of a whole language component of reading, or are they going to phonics? Because I remember a couple of years ago there was talk that you were going to be going to more phonics. Now, if this is talking about getting more phonics into the classroom, well, maybe that's probably helpful. But if the Oregon Education Association is in favor with it, I'm just very suspicious, very suspicious. And other people were very suspicious about this too. I ended up getting an email. In fact, I'm going to give this guy an email of the day. Larry Smith. Larry Smith writes me from Jacksonville. And he says, Bill, the talk last week centered around the drop in reading scores in Oregon, especially among high school students. The assistant head of education for Oregon said we can do better. Then why don't they? And her solution, they need more money. I've been in the classroom for 58 years and have seen a growing trend that no matter how much money they pour into the problem, it doesn't get fixed. They always want more money to solve every problem. We need to face reality in this matter. I was talking to a high school teacher this week, and Larry says often only half of her students even bother to show up, and those that do are often late. How can they learn if they're not here? I was talking to an elementary school teacher earlier this week. A third of his class shows up tardy every day. Back when kids rode school buses, they arrived on time. Now that parents feel the need to drive their kids to school, they often show up late. I've often wondered about that, Larry. Thank you for bringing that up. The absenteeism and tardiness shows a lack of respect for school. This has a direct effect on the kids and their readiness to learn. I was talking to another high school teacher last week who told me that her school rules on phones was a joke. The kids just don't pay attention to the rules. They're constantly distracted. Who wants to read when you can text using your thumbs? Most teachers have just given up. They don't want to battle, or they do want to battle their kids. I think maybe he meant to say they don't want to battle the kids. Teachers have also told me that the kids are coming to school high on marijuana, clear down to kindergarten. Parents are blowing smoke on them. Marijuana destroys their brains. How could a kid even want to learn growing up in a drug-infested home, alcohol included? Not learning to write cursive has a direct effect on how students view learning and the way they express their writings on paper. That is another whole project or subject. Striking a key does not have the same effect as on the letter of word flowing off the end of a pen or pencil. Screen time. Students often spend an hour or two working on their Chromebooks at school. They're constantly being bombarded with electromagnetic waves. Electromagnetic waves everywhere, brains being microwaved. And I could go on and on about the distractions that are deterring kids from learning. Basically, school is an irritation to their social life. Throwing more money into the schools to fix the reading problem is going to be a waste until society fixes itself. Really interesting. Larry, thank you. I'm going to give you an email of the day. That's another sign of this because the state of Oregon, the full press on literacy, says more money. And Larry Smith is saying, I don't know. It's like the solution is always more money. Now, the problem with the kids being distracted, the kids not showing up, yep, that's a family and a cultural issue there. I didn't have that problem. I showed up at school, and I was quite attentive. It kind of worked for me. But though, my mother also taught me to read. I knew how to read before I was able to go into school. I was reading a lot better than my peers, much better. And that ended up helping me get the most out of a education system that probably even 50 years ago in the 1970s was declining. Most likely not nearly as rigorous as what my mother and father had in the 1940s and 50s. Just saying. I don't claim to have a solution for this right now. But when they're talking about a full court press on literacy, and I'm not hearing talk about phonics or... And all I'm hearing is that we just need more money and we need more training for teachers. The question I would have for you, given that my mother, who did not go to college, was able to teach me how to read, how much training do you need? How much college education training do you need and programs from the state do you need to teach a child to read? It's a serious question. My mother was not a professional, did not go to college. She just had a K through 12 education. What is it about the Oregon Department of Education that seems to need more money and training? And I'm just a little confused about it. So please help me with my confusion if you could. I think this is going to be a longer term conversation, but that's what we're here for. You're on the Bill Meyer Show.
It's amazing. What's right under your floor can impact your whole house. Musty smells, wall cracks, uneven floors, doors and windows that stick. These could all be your home sending you warning signs that there's a problem. But one simple call can be the answer to fixing everything under your home. For more than a decade, Terra Firma has been our area's number one solution for better basements, foundations, and crawl spaces. So why waste another day worrying? Make an investment in a more healthy, more valuable home. Call Terra Firma today.
Are you turning 65 and entering Medicare this year? The details can be confusing, and it's easy to miss important facts or get stuck with a late fee. Come see me well ahead of your birthday so you can make sure you understand the system and have time to think through your options. So if you're turning 65, call me, Lynn Barton, at 541-499-0958 or find me at skyparkins.com and let me make Medicare easy.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
March is Maintenance Madness Month at Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford. We want to remind you to check your fluids at least once a month to help avoid costly repairs. When you come in for any service at Kelly's, we do a thorough inspection that includes pictures and videos of the good and not so good of your car that are texted and emailed directly to you. You then decide what to fix and how to plan for the future. Check us out at kellysautomotive.com. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle but take care of you.
Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
It's 6:30. Scott Waller's going to join me for a few minutes. Has some news about the Democratic money-making machine showing some signs of strain. Tom is in talent. Tom, you wanted to bite on my talk. I was talking about Larry Smith's letter to me from Jacksonville over the weekend, talking about the challenges within the school. And we're told that the solution to getting kids to read is, of course, always more money. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, my mother was a K through 12 student, didn't go to college, didn't go to teacher college, taught me how to read. A lot of parents used to do that. What happened? I mean, we didn't need, you know, we didn't need science, the science of reading, to tell us what was going on. Where are we on that, huh?
Well, Bill, I tell you, the big battle going on in the country right now and across the globe is between our ears, mind control. And I always say that's the, you know, the site of World War III. And making sure that kids can't read or think is very important in that agenda. And I think that's really coming from higher up.
So you believe it's an intentional dumb-down then? Not by accident?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you had Charlotte Isserby, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. That's the book she wrote. And going into it, of course, you had many talks with Diane Anderson about the communization, indoctrination going on with kids. You see it with the Ashland High School. You know, poor kids are so damn ignorant, and they think that they're saving the planet by banning gas and, you know, natural gas in Ashland.
Yeah, yeah, ban modern civilization and we'll save the planet, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and all the, you know, like I say, Alan Janney and his merry band of climate fanatics.
But do you think we can survive? Do you think we can survive the intellectual bankrupting of our country? I don't know.
Well, that's the ongoing question of whether we're going to survive at all. I mean, we got. I don't like Trump's idea of going more war and so forth. There's so many things going on and so many issues going on, but the ability to read and to think about issues seems to be the real problem that's going on.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at
the issue of reading.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at how so often in this story, this Willamette Week story, is talking about this House Bill 3040, supposedly fix reading, and they want to get everybody into the science of reading. The science. I don't think there's any science involved with reading. It's pretty much a
straightforward.
Yeah,
I was kind of curious about. When I still remember sitting down in first grade, and there was the blackboard, but above the blackboard was the entire alphabet going across the top of the blackboard, big, great big letters and so forth, A, B, C, D, E, and we sang the song, you know, the alphabet song.
Yeah.
And
it was done rote by rote. You know, these were not considered technically creative things. And of course, I know there was a big push. Oh, rote learning is bad. I think, wait a minute, rote learning was able to give you the concepts of something to start with, and then you're able to expand out
and get the
bigger principles and like multiplication tables. And rather than the math, the way math is being taught at the moment, in which parents cannot even help their children because it is so nonsensical. The way math is being currently discussed, so it does seem to be an intentional process. But yeah, science of reading, I'm really confused. I'm disheartened when I see that because it. Thank you for the call, by the way, Tom. It strikes me as a fix that's not really a fix. I could be wrong, but hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this? Welcome.
Hi, Bill. This is Vicky from the Applegate.
Hi, Vicky. What's going on in your mind?
You know. The schools are so dependent on money, and I believe what's happening is if you study to be a teacher, you should not have to have more education because you already know how to read. Obviously, you know how to read.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have been a teacher. Second of all...
So, obviously, the process in which they're teaching reading must be flawed because you're right. All the teachers coming out of the... And unfortunately, coming out of most of the teaching colleges are... white, left-wing, liberal women, you know, in charge of the education system. We just have to call that as it is, okay?
And, right.
And so obviously there's a disconnect between what they know how to do and then how it's getting to the children. And then supposedly there needs to be more money and more training, which I don't quite understand. Where am I wrong about this? It's a mystery to me.
Okay, so as far as the money, I know that over the decades, they have increased the money per child that's in the school.
Mm-hmm.
If the kids are skipping school or coming in late, they have to make up, if it's a known absence, they don't get that money for that day.
Oh.
So I believe that they are trying to go around the bush and get money where to make up for the kids that aren't showing up to school.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. 770-5633. Hi, Jane. Give me a wrap up on this one, huh?
Yeah, I was calling about the Titanic and J.P. Morgan. It seems like J.P. Morgan kind of owned the company that built the Titanic. And he had it all scheduled to go out on an inaugural cruise. But he backed off at the last minute, like he knew it was going to sink. But three of his banker friends that were competitors, they were on the Titanic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it seems to me that J.P. Morgan maybe had something to do with the sinking of the Titanic.
Okay, it's not Conspiracy Theory Thursday, though.
Well, does that really matter anymore at all?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're the right one. All right, Gene, thanks for the call. Scott Walter joins me. We're going to talk about the conspiratorial Democratic dark money machine next.
Got a mess with the IRS or a tax date with the state? You may need representation. Visit firstresponseirs.com. First Response Resolution, your local tax resolution experts in Eagle Point, defending your rights as a taxpayer. Visit firstresponseirs.com.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. If you want to help Oregonians affected by flooding, be careful not to get scammed. The Oregon Department of Emergency Management says there's increased risks of fraud following flooding. They say be careful to avoid fake fundraising accounts on GoFundMe. OEM recommends only making donations to organizations or individuals you know. Oregon is joining the rest of the states supporting a lawsuit against the federal government over a denial of education benefits for two vets. The lawsuit claims they were denied 4 years of benefits under the GI bills. It argues the Veterans Administration has taken a restrictive interpretation that contradicts past rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Trump administration plans to close field offices for the Department of Housing and Urban Development in Portland and Seattle. Democratic members of Oregon's congressional delegation are working to reverse that decision. They say regional staff have the experience to meet local needs. The nearest field office would be in San Francisco. Bill London, KMED News.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precision and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease and quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today to get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736. CCB number 25073.
Nominations are open for this year's Bicoastal Media Best of Southern Oregon contest, presented by Dusty's Transmissions. Nominate and support your favorite businesses now at bestofsouthernoregon.com. There's nearly 200 categories to nominate all your favorite suppliers of goods and services, whether it's medical, automotive, beauty, entertainment, food and beverage, and more. There's a category to nominate all of your favorites. So visit bestofsouthernoregon.com today. Nominations close Wednesday, April 2nd at 5 p.m.
Should you trust your drinking water on a do-it-yourself water test? I don't think so. At the Grants Pass Water Lab, we get a lot of calls about this. The kits are cheap and, yeah, they look easy, but the results can be confusing and still require a lab follow-up. Save your money and go straight to the water lab. Our equipment is much better at detection, and our staff sure beats a hard-to-read instruction packet. Find us online at thewaterlab.com or gpwaterlab.com.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
20 before 7, Scott Walter joins you from Capital Research Center. It's a research center, but you're kind of like a research think tank of sorts. Isn't that the case here, Scott? Why don't you tell me what the main mission is once again for those that don't know?
Sure. Well, the main mission is simple. We investigate the left deeply and expose it widely. And we like to call ourselves America's investigative think tank. We don't produce white papers with statistics. We dig deep into how the left actually operates.
I ended up getting an email from your group last week, and I wanted to talk with you a bit about this. And it was discussing more or less the dark money machine of the Democratic Party. And the letter was indicating that it appears to be under stress. Would you tend to agree with that, or maybe you could explain that a bit further here? And what is the dark money machine of choice that is having difficulty getting filled these days for the Democratic Party, which does not really bother me, but it's good to know what mechanisms they were using because they could be revived at some point. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. The largest quote-unquote dark money machine for the left would be the network that's operated by Arabella Advisors.
That's right.
That's a half dozen nonprofits. That's where the checks go, is the nonprofits. But it's operated by a for-profit called Arabella Advisors. And they had a spectacular 2020 in revenues. Their revenues shot up almost 2.5 times. And since then, while they still are more than $1 billion a year, as far as the amount of money coursing through the network, they've actually dropped 22% from that high through 2023, the most recent year the data is available. So they've seen money falling off. They have a very serious lawsuit they're battling from a black woman who accused them of racism as well as violating nonprofit law. So they are struggling. And then, of course, Act Blue is the top fundraising platform for the left, for the small dollar donors for the left. Arabella works more for the billionaires. And Act Blue seems to be just imploding. They had 7 top employees leave a couple of weeks ago, including the entire legal compliance staff, or so the New York Times tells me.
Is there any evidence that that Act Blue or Mirabella somehow ends up getting affected by what's going on at Doge right now, when you have one hand maybe washing the other in Washington, D.C., within the actual government structure and the NGO world? Is there any thoughts on that?
Well, the Trump administration certainly could be expected to clash with some of these folks in various ways.
Sure.
Doge is not the main way because the Act Blue and Arabella don't get hardly anything in the way of federal funding.
Okay. All right. I'm just kind of like wondering, though, if friendlies, for some reason, end up working within the federal government system, and then when all of a sudden you say you're going to shut down a lot of USAID, you know, as an example, or various other departments of the federal government, if all of a sudden, Act Blue or a Mirabella type of nonprofit is not able to perhaps leverage federal money and influence as much. You know, I'm always kind of wondering, you know, the shadowy webs and interconnectedness that we don't necessarily know about, which you discover a lot over at Capital Research Center.
Yeah, well, we do have, I'll give you a new website that we've put up, the dogefiles.org. Mm-hmm. And that is our deep dive looks at the grant agency by agency. So we have USAID and Education Department and HHS and HUD and state and more. But as it turns out, the Axe Blue and Arabella themselves don't really get significant federal funding.
Okay.
But on the other hand, that doesn't mean that the new administration couldn't be at odds with them elsewhere, including, you know, the regulations on the nonprofit world and the investigations and examinations of what's going on in the nonprofit world. Those certainly might produce conflict with Arabella and Act Blue.
Okay. Scott Walter with me, Capital Research Center. It's America's investigative think tank. So Doge Files, definitely going to want to read more on this. And I'm going to want to contribute to your group here, too, because I'm glad that there's someone actually investigating this rather than just, you know, hoping that the Gateway pundit, you know, comes up with a story, you know, that kind of thing. What about the issues with rent-a-mobs here? I've noticed that the Republican Party folks, I was talking with Congressman Cliff Bentz here, Scott, and he came into town over the weekend, and there has been a rise of what they're trying to make it look like grassroots resistance to the Trump policy. And I start thinking about Arabella, and I start thinking about Act Blue and these various other groups that you have also, you know, investigated. And then you hear Chuck Schumer over the weekend, the senator, talking about, oh, yeah, we're sending people here. We're sending people there. We're sending people, you know, to confront the Republicans everywhere they go. Well, if they're having to send people there, that strikes me that it's not particularly organic. And that'd be a fair assessment. And where does the money for that kind of stuff come from? Is that, you know, through Act Blue and various similar shadowy type groups?
Yes. The, you know, the left doesn't just have more money than conservatives. It also has enormously greater muscles for organizing protests than conservatives do. So it is, you know, it is not at all a purely grassroots thing the way that, for instance, the Tea Party was, you know, back in the prior administration.
Right.
Conservatives just, you know, simultaneously doing this. So you have lots of things involved. One of my personal favorites, there's a group called Families Over Billionaires. And you're supposed to think that that's ordinary Americans angry that the tax cuts would be renewed, right?
Yeah, but of course, you know, every time I hear something with like that, Families Over Billionaires, I can't help but suspect, and maybe this is just my cynicism, Scott, but it's been organized by a billionaire or two.
No, no, exactly. It's billionaires allegedly for Families Over Billionaires.
Oh, okay.
And the it is, surprise, surprise, it is a completely fake group set up by the Arabella Network and featuring multiple partners, because you see there's so many people in groups upset about this, except most of those partners are either inside the Arabella Network or getting money from the Arabella Network. It's just pathetic and laughable the second you look into it. The Free Press had a good article about Families Over Billionaires. So if you just search Free Press, Families Over Billionaires, you'll find a great investigative piece using some of our research and quoting us about this preposterous fakery.
What do you think are the chances that the Trump administration may be successful at finding a way to dial down the influences of these kind of shadowy big Democratic money machines here? Because it has the appearance of impropriety, but it's most likely not legal. Or might there be some examples where it's not legal too? Looking at a way to fight this, it's one thing to expose it and talk about it, but if they're still doing their work, there's an issue.
Well, I think the answer is that usually it is theoretically legal for them to operate the way they're operating in theory, but nonprofit laws are very complex, so there's a lot of T's you have to cross and I's you have to dot to keep everything kosher. And my suspicion is that they are so used to operating with impunity that they probably aren't doing a good job of carefully complying with all the laws. The lawsuit against Arabella definitely suggests that, because it seems to show that an Arabella C3, which is a charity, legally speaking, mm-hmm. was actually running an outside C4, which is a political nonprofit like League of Conservation Voters or NRA. That is not kosher if that really happened. And boy, the evidence seems strong that it did.
So might the weak link or the inflection point then to, you know, reducing the influence of these shadowy organizations being just to enforce the tax laws or the nonprofit status and the C3, the C4s, all the various others. In other words, a little more oversight from the government. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I would not be surprised if that happens. But by the way, don't sell yourself short, right? What we're describing here is Wizard of Oz operations, right?
Right.
And the wizard is really scary when Dorothy first sees the wizard. Big, scary, you know, fabulous production values, you might say. But once the dog pulls the curtain back and you see it's just some old guy at a microphone, well, then the wizard doesn't have the power to scare Dorothy and affect Dorothy much. So what you're doing by educating people on this is a huge part of the solution.
Well, that I'm glad to hear. Scott Walter, and once again, it is Capital Research Center. Capitalresearch.org is the website. Could you tell us a little bit more about Influence Watch? This is something you've been really proud of here, what people can find out more about, who's influencing whom. That's good stuff.
Yes, that is. It's our Wikipedia of the special influencers. Over 14, it's an online encyclopedia and has over 14,000 entries. We're talking unions and foundations and donors and, you know, movements like the Green New Deal, just a staggering amount of information. Looks and feels like Wikipedia. Everything's interconnected. Everything is documented. The one thing I do want to warn your listeners, though, the first time you jump on that site, you're probably kissing 5 hours of your life goodbye because you're going to go down so many rabbit holes.
So, in other words, you go to, now, is it a separate website or is it all part of Capital Research? Did you get it through the same
totally
place?
Oh, separate website.
Okay. And what is that then?
I'm sorry, you mean what is the main site?
Yeah, you know, the address. Is it Influence Watch?
Oh, yeah, influencewatch.org.
Okay. So, give yourself a Saturday or a Sunday then to really delve into it and then start connecting this dot to another dot to another dot to another dot. And something tells me in Oregon we'll be able to find a lot of dots to connect, okay? And that's why you're so important.
Well, thank you.
All right. CapitalResearch.org, CapitalResearch.org. It's just one of those groups which is not getting nearly as much attention as it should, and we want to help do our best to help this because they're doing work behind the scenes and putting together the information. You just have to find it through them. And connect some dots, and maybe we can get some cleanup going on here. Scott, I appreciate you coming on for a few minutes, and thanks. And we'll have you back again. You take care, okay? Be well.
Appreciate it.
CapitalResearch.org. You're on the Bill Myers Show.
We've heard it all.
That boulder was hidden in the grass.
My St. Bernard jumped on the hood.
Gonna have to get that emergency brake fixed.
Garage doors need to go up faster.
But the reason you need auto body repair doesn't matter to us as much as making your car look new again and the process easy for you. At Lithia Body and Paint, we've been getting Southern Oregon drivers back on the road since 1946. Service, speed, accuracy. That's Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
This is Brent from Home and Built Deck and Fence, your Trex Pro Gold Builder. Is your deck ready for an upgrade? Trex's 2025 lineup features stunning new colors, increased pet-friendly scratch resistance, and heat-mitigating technology to keep your feet cool. Add Trex deck lighting, secure handrails, and rain escape drainage for the ultimate outdoor space. With the Trex Pro Gold Builder product and labor warranty, you can rest easy. Let's get started. Call 541-500-9330 or visit homeandbuilt.com today. We build the best and fix the rest.
Two Dogs Fabricating carries Northstar flatbeds and trailers, along with a full line of Horizon and Iron Bull trailers. But we built our business on in-house custom fabrication. All custom jobs are under one roof, saving time and bringing costs down while constructing your bed or trailer exactly the way you want it. So if you have a unique trailer or flatbed in mind, Two Dogs will design and build and have you on the road in just a few weeks. Two Dogs Fabricating. Our doghouse is on Bryan Way, just off Sage Road. Visit twodogsfab.com.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
6 before 7, 770-5633, like the man had mentioned in there. 770-5633. I got an email from Kevin Sterrett. I was going to share because he ended up writing an email to House Republican Leader Christine Drazen. And this having to do with House Bill 3075. This is the one that would end up essentially Measure 114 on steroids, even worse than Measure 114. Representative Drazen, House Bill 3075 will be on the floor shortly. Let me get to the point. Should this bill pass, all our legal efforts to block Measure 114 are moot. The lawyers have informed me that both our federal and state cases cease to exist, which means hundreds of thousands of dollars of Oregon's Second Amendment supporters have spent will be meaningless because of this. The bill will, for all intents and purposes, end legal gun transfers for all but the wealthiest and best-connected Oregonians, if even then. Gun shops in Oregon will close, many have already given up, and their employees will be out of work. The most vulnerable people in our state will be denied the means to protect themselves and their families. Thousands of Oregonians will become criminals instantly as a result of the magazine ban. I'm confident you know this. You also know that for all the press releases and bluster about fighting for Oregonians, your caucus has no power. You cannot pass or block anything unless the Democrats approve. You have certainly learned the futility of making deals with them. The only purpose the Oregon Republicans serve at this point is to provide a quorum for the Democrats to pass whatever they want. And, of course, to continue your political careers, which as of now are 100% for show. Without the Democrats' approval, your caucus is completely impotent. You have one tool to stand in the way of this horrendous and clearly unconstitutional attack on the rights of your constituents and the constituents of your caucus members. That is to refuse to participate in the charade. If you try to excuse staying on the floor because if you walk there will be legislation or ballot measures to change the quorum, people will recall that was the excuse used in the past so that there would be no ballot measure to punish people for walkouts, and you got them anyway. Similarly, the Democrats will do all they can to change the quorum no matter what you do. If 3075 passes, there will be no legal recourse that has any chance of success. If it does not, Oregon gun owners at least buy some time in the courts. And no matter what the outcome of that is, it gives them a chance to prepare or move out of the state. I think, well, I hope that you'll agree that a state whose leaders rely on transgender turtles for mental health advice is in serious decline. I love the way Kevin writes, by the way. There is no more time to pretend you can deal with these people in good faith. I strongly, strongly urge you to refuse to participate in the insanity. And if your people are on the floor for this bill, as passage will be your responsibility, and for anyone who is paying attention, there will be no reason to vote for a Republican in the future. Kevin Starrett. Now, everything that Kevin Starrett said is true. It is the truth. Absolutely no doubt about this. And it's as serious as a heart attack, Measure 3075, 3076, and various other ones. We have there's a lot of carnage coming this way. And what he got back from Representative Drazen speaks volumes. Kevin, thank you for your email. Democrats are set on taking away our Second Amendment rights, and we need your help in this fight. House Bill 3075 is a dangerous attack on gun owners and threatens to block access to gun ownership. Yada, 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 everything like that. House Republicans are standing up for the rights of Oregonians. We've done it before, and we will do it again. But the reality is that Tina Kotek and her Democrat allies in Salem have us surrounded. I have walked out. I have run for governor. I have returned to the legislature to keep fighting. I will never stop fighting for your rights and future of our state. But we need to work together. We need your help to overwhelm the inboxes and voicemail boxes of the Democrats that are pushing House Bill 3075. I need you to contact the Speaker of the House, Representative Julie Fahey, and Representative Kropf, author of HB 3075. I also urge you to contact Democrats on the Judiciary Committee and tell them to stop attacking our Second Amendment rights and vote no on House Bill 3075. Please find the contact information below. And then here's the number for Fahey and Kropf. My question for you this morning, when Democrats have been pushing gun control and tell their constituents that they are going to push gun control and they're putting gun control everywhere and they have the votes to pass it, and the only thing that we can do is walk out to stop it from being passed in the first place, what is Now, I have no doubt this was a form letter. I'm sure that there was a 12-year-old staffer that saw it come in. Okay, here, send them the gun control email response. It's obviously an email response or a form letter response, you know, that kind of thing. But we have Representative Drazen, who knows that the Democrats intend to do this, tell their constituents they're going to do it, and that the way to fight it is to not walk out and deny them the ability to pass it, but to call the Democrats? Does that make sense? Does that make sense that the House Republican leader is saying call the Democrats to stop House Bill 3075 from passing? They have the votes. They have more than enough votes to do it. But they need the Republicans present there. I was talking both to State Rep. Kim Wallen and also E. Warner Reschke. They were both at Lincoln Day dinner over the weekend. And they both told me that there is not broad support for a walkout. Well, if there's not broad support for a walkout, doesn't that mean that our problems, as bad as they are with the Democrats, we're not going to fix the Democrats' problem? The Democrats don't look at it as a problem. They have the votes. They can cram anything down our throats that they want, if they want to, unless we use the one tool. Now, the thing is, you don't want to be walking out all the time. But when the worst of the worst are coming up here, and arguably Measure 30 or House Bill 3075 is some of the worst, if you've walked out before, why can't you walk out again? Now, if you tell me it's Measure 113, the only reason Measure 113 matters at this point is because Tim Knope, when there was the last walkout that happened last time, he didn't demand that the Republicans' absences were excused. That's how you do it. Everybody knows this is how you can do it. If the Democrats want to be able to send money to the NGOs and the stabbing wagons of this world and keep Oregon Health Authority funded and all the rest of it, it's the only thing that they need the Republicans for at this point. Well, we need them to stop the gun grab bills. We need them to protect our rights. And there's some other bills that are really, really bad. You walk out, you stop them from doing business until they, A, kill the bills that are the worst of the worst in here, and then excuse our absences. And then we go back in. The Democrats are doing what the Democrats promised their people they were going to do. Our people, the Republicans, need to do what they promised to do. And it's not to show up at the state legislature, but it is to represent us. And sometimes to represent us, you have to not play the Democrats' game. You have to remove their ability to conduct business and to pass everything and to pass budgets. It'll be hard. But the hard things are important to do. That's why we need to do them, in my opinion. So I would highly recommend, frankly, folks, I know that if Christine Drazen is telling everybody to call the Democrats, we need to call Christine Drazen. And we need to call all the other Republicans. Call the Republicans and tell them to get over this this fear of walking out. Because otherwise, there's no Oregon for you to worry about running for re-election next time. And yeah, the Democrats will probably end up getting rid of the quorum power at some point. They'll find a way to do it. They'll change it. They'll find a way to do it. They have the votes to do it. But the Republicans have this power, what's left of this power right now. And if they don't use it, then whatever happens to the Republicans deserves to happen to them, I guess. But the problem is you and I have to pay the price. So don't bother calling the Democrats. Or, I mean, you can call the Democrats if you want. But as far as I'm concerned, Representative Drazen is passing the buck and hoping that you won't notice.